What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. Two new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back. We're better. Let's get it.
Back here on WEEI, great rejoin by Tom Cristofiuli, Polo G action, appreciate that. And the Red Sox right now are in the midst of another one of those huge stretches of their season. And I know, look, it's all one of 162, I get it, okay? But we talked a ton coming out of the All-Star break about they had three games against the Cubs, three games against the Phillies, three games against the Dodgers. It was those nine games against World Series contenders. They went 4-5, not ideal, but not terrible. Since then, they've played awesome baseball. And you look at now, they're in the midst of another one of those stretches, right? They had three against Houston last weekend. Then they had the three against the Royals mixed in. But now it's three against the Padres and three in Houston. So in a two-week span, that's nine more games, six against Houston, three against San Diego, against World Series contenders. And we saw them sweep Houston last weekend, win first two against Kansas City, and now they win last night in San Diego, which was a game, nothing in the fourth. Red Sox explode then. They get the bases loaded with nobody out. Yoshida, huge night for Yoshida, by the way. Yoshida with a sack fly. Then there was that wild pickoff throw that made it 2-0. And then the key moment, really, Abreu with that two-run home run. By the way, his 21st home run of the season. Don't look now. Willy Abreu has the most home runs on the Red Sox, and he is the Red Sox best power hitter. So just saying about Willy Abreu, he is the Red Sox best power hitter. But as I mentioned last night, huge night for Masataka Yoshida. That was nice to see. 2-for-4 with 3 RBI. Sac fly, as I mentioned, had the home run later on. We saw Connor Wong get his first hit of the season with runners in scoring position. It was a bases clearing double. He went 2-for-5 with 3 RBIs on the night. Roman Anthony had 2 more hits. It was a really good night for this lineup, but it's also a great night for Walker Buehler. 6 innings, no runs, 4 strikeouts, only 4 hits allowed. And you saw the Red Sox bullpen on the whole. Weissert gave up a run, and Murphy gave up a run back-to-back. But Whitlock and Campbell kept things quiet. So I thought last night was a great night for the Red Sox, not just because they won 10-2, but to go into San Diego, which is not an easy place to play. But I went to a Padres game a couple years ago, and granted, it was Padres versus Dodgers, so there was extra juice, but that's not an easy place for a visiting team to play. Padres are wearing those ice cream truck multicolored uniforms, whatever. And Tom, by the way, you like those Padres City Connects?
No.
I actually kind of like, I don't love them. They're not my favorite. And I know people love uniform talk. Like, I love the Brave City Connect. Kind of, I like the Red Sox new ones. Kind of like Detroit's jersey. Like, there's some that I really like. The Diamondbacks new ones are cool. The Padres are, like, pretty good.
Baseball would be the sport I know the least about jerseys. Like, you want to talk NBA,
yeah.
Football, I got you. I'm still backordered for my Garrett Crochet City Connect jersey, so.
Yeah, well, you know, you're just going to do what Rich Keefe did.
Beg.
Have a campaign.
Beg.
And get one.
I don't think I have the clout that Rich Keefe has, though.
I remember when those City Connects came out, I texted our boss, Ken, and I was like, hey, just an obligatory text if there's any City Connect stuff for me. And he's just like, no. I'm like, okay, that's okay. I kind of figure. I do like them. So, total side note, I don't hate the Padres City Connects. I think they're all right. Not the best, but not the worst. But anyways, last night, Padres, again, legit World Series contending team, 64-win team, and the Red Sox came into the game with 64 wins themselves. And this is a team that has Fernando Tatis Jr., one, you know, top 20 player in baseball. A few years ago, he was a top 5 player in baseball. Probably top 20 player in baseball. Luis Arraez, Manny Machado having another great season. Jackson Merrill, who has been injured earlier this year, but he's a really good player. Bogarts, who I know a lot of people, and people do this every year, they want to write off Xander Bogarts early. You look back at his career, almost every single year, he either had a bad April or a bad May and then recovered and had a great year, and that's exactly what's happening this year. So Xander Bogarts, good player. Right, and the team that just invested at the deadline, added Mason Miller to already the best bullpen in the league. So you go into San Diego, you win that Friday night game. That's a really valuable win. And again, Abreu, that was great to see. Pivetta left that pitch up, and Abreu sent it out of the park. That was a cool moment to me for Willie Abreu. Great moment for the Red Sox. Bregman also drove in a run in the fifth inning. And then top of the eighth. By the way, Padres bullpen usually good, but, man, not good control last night. I don't know what happened with Reynolds. Five earned runs. And what do you have, like four or five walks or something in the inning? It's crazy, right? But I thought last night, again, really encouraging win for the Red Sox. Yoshida had that two-run homer late. And I haven't really mentioned enough. I talked about him a little bit earlier in this segment. But Walker Buehler, a guy who in the month of June had an ERA that was over 11 in the month of June. I thought he was going to get DFA'd at the end of June. I remember I did a Red Sox review show from his last start in June, and he got smoked. And it was the classic, I think it was that fourth inning, which he's been bad in all year, third or fourth, whichever one is, got smoked. And since then, now he hasn't been elite, but it's been a pretty sizable turnaround. I think you could say, I mean, you look at July, he had a six-inning start July 10th, seven innings against Philly. Then now last week against Houston, only four and a third, but then six strong innings last night. So the Walker Buehler improvement has been encouraging. I'm not really going to put a ton of stock in it. No offense to Walker Buehler, but I've seen way too many bad starts this year. But he was great last night. And again, this is a Red Sox team, and I think we all know it, right? Last few years, they go into the All-Star break playing well, or they go into the trade deadline playing well, and then they fall off. So far, they haven't fallen off. A trade deadline ends, they play great against Houston, play great against Kansas City, and they play great at least in one game last night against the Padres. So great to see again. Great to see the home run for Abreu. Yoshida, it's nice to see him have a good night, because Yoshida's another guy. We've talked about him before. We talk about this outfield with Duran and with Rafaela and with Abreu and with Anthony, and Yoshida's been penciled in as a DH. But then we've also talked about, well, if Yoshida's not playing well, can you put one of those four outfielders at DH and just have them all in your lineup? And I know Rafaela's also spent some time at second. But if Yoshida can continue to have nights like last night, or at least good nights, it's just another weapon for the Red Sox to have. So again, a really encouraging night from the Red Sox last night. Let's go to the phone, 617-779-7937. Let's go to Matt in Rhode Island, wants to talk some Red Sox. Matt, welcome in.
Hey, what's going on, Lions?
What's up?
I didn't know you were a big Polo G fan.
Oh, my goodness, I am. He's probably, I would say right now, he's one of my top five favorite rappers of all time, and he's probably, wow, of the guys who are like currently out making music, he might be my favorite guy out right now.
Yeah, great job on the rejoins. Rejoins is so underappreciated in sports radio. I love the rejoins. But I'll make this quick. Peyton Tully's in Worcester. Do you think there's a possibility they bring him up? Maybe in the bullpen. Thanks.
That's all right. So, before the season, Peyton Tully was kind of unheard of. And then he cracked the top 100 prospect list. I want to say it was, Tom, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was like six weeks-ish ago.
I'll look it up.
He cracked the top 100 list, and now he's in Worcester. And here's the thing. You didn't trade for Joe Ryan at the deadline. We've talked about that ad nauseum, right? You didn't trade for Zach Gallen. You didn't trade for Merrill Kelly. So, okay, you bring in Dustin May. Is Dustin May a little bit better than Walker Buehler? Maybe. And that's kind of his ceiling right now. So, as Rob Bradford walks by, baseball isn't boring, coming up in a little bit.
It was in July.
So it wasn't even 6 weeks ago that Peyton Tully became a top 100 pitcher. So I just, to Matt's call, I don't want to rely on that right now. I think you're pitching down the stretch. It's going to have to be, obviously, Crochet, but it's going to have to be Bayo. It's going to have to be Giolito. It's going to have to be, can you get some more outings from Buehler like you got last night? I mean, again, Buehler is not going to give you quality starts all the time, but he can get, if one out of every two or three of his starts can be a quality start, great. You know, I think from where he was with an 11 ERA in the month of June, I mean, he had a good start against Philly, which is a really good team. He had a good start last night against the Padres. It's a really good Padres team. He had, I thought, a start to finish, six innings, really good ball, right? And then when Pivetta gave up those four runs in the fifth, Buehler came out, answered it in the sixth, and kept the Padres at zero. So good night for the Red Sox last night on the whole. And I think, again, and I'm going to get to this more in our next segment, Red Sox are in the midst of another one of these key stretches, and they've got 5 games left in this stretch. 2 more against the Padres, 1 tonight you'll hear on WEEI, 3 against Houston next week. And I think then at that point, we'll be able to kind of look at this team, we'll be in mid-August by then, and say, man, can this team really go deep in the playoffs? Because I think there's a lot of hope, right? You have Chapman, you have Crochet, you have Bregman, Roman Anthony and his extension. I'm going to get to that next too. There's a lot of hope. And I think this stretch is giving us some, not just hope, but some real concrete answers. So I'm going to talk some Red Sox. I'm going to take your calls on everything coming up next. But first, it's time to trend with Tom Crisafulli.
The Greg Hill Show, weekdays 6 to 10.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
The Patriots won their first preseason game of the year against the Washington Commanders last night. 49-18 was the final score. Travion Henderson set the tone for the game, scoring a touchdown on the opening kickoff, taking it 100 yards to the house. Drake May played 2-fold series last night. He fumbled on the first one, but he did run in for a touchdown on the second one. The Red Sox defeated the Padres 10-2 last night. They look to go 2 in a row tonight. Coverage starts at 7:40 with Dan Ball on the MassMutual pregame show with the first pitch at 8:40. And as always, you can listen to the game right here on WEEI 93.7, the Shaw's Install Market, Red Sox Radio Network, Shaw's, go shopping, get rewarded. Lucas Giolito is on the mound for the Boston Red Sox tonight. I'm Tom Crisafulli, and that's your training here on WEEI.
What's up? It's Draymond Green, back for my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast, The Draymond Green Show. Unfiltered takes, real hoop talk, and big-time guests. There's no holding back on the court or on the mic. Follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
I.com.
Back here on WEEI, I'm John Lyons, talking some Red Sox. Spoke Patriots earlier in the show. Encouraging joint practice this week for the Patriots. Encouraging preseason game last night. Also talked some Celtics earlier in the show because Rich Gotham had some interesting comments on the Celtics themselves, but also Jason Tatum in his recovery. If you missed any of the show, well, there's the Odyssey app. There's the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your WEEI, it's there. WEEI.com even as well, right? Find it, consume it, enjoy it. Let's go to the phones quickly. I am going to keep talking Red Sox here, but Tony in Revere has a Celtics thought he wants to share. Tony, welcome into the program. What do you got?
Yeah, what I got is I think it's a really depressing, sad day if you're a Celtics fan. Brad Stevens re-upping Joe Mazzulla, whose philosophy on offense is let's shoot more of the threes than the other team. We have a good chance to win. We don't even care if they go in. Just shoot more threes than the other team. And that's Joe Mazzulla, and he re-upped him for a longer extension contract. It's pathetic. They won this championship 2 years ago playing against teams that every star player was injured. If Brad Stevens put stock in that, and that's his measuring stick for Joe Mazzulla, that championship, the phony championship 2 years ago.
All right, thanks for the call. I'm not calling it a phony championship, okay? And if you remember, Tyrese Halliburton did play the first 2 games of that Indiana series, and then they went to Game 7 of the finals this past year, so that was a great team. And a fully loaded Mavs team got totally outclassed by the Celtics in 5 games in 2024. So I'm not going back down that road. The Mazzulla extension, though, and I am going to get to Red Sox here coming up, but I didn't really get a chance to talk much about that. I actually like it. And look, is he the best coach in the NBA? No. Is he as good of a coach as Ime Udoka? No, I don't think so. But I think he's a good coach, won a championship here. And look, the three-point thing and the philosophy, I think we saw that against the Knicks. And I know a lot of people will say, well, they missed a bunch of open shots. That's correct. They had 20-point leads in back-to-back games against the Knicks. And I think, and I maintain this to this day, biggest reason they lost to the Knicks is the Porzingis injury because they couldn't throw the ball in the post and score when they weren't hitting threes, which is something that when he was healthy, they were able to do left and right. But the next biggest thing, the Knicks were mentally and physically tougher than the Celtics in that series. And I think Joe Mazzulla has to figure out a way to get beyond that. That is a criticism of him. And when you're missing a bunch of threes, maybe don't shoot as many. Like, it's what I understand if they're open. But if none of them are going in, which we saw in the second halves, especially those fourth quarters of game 1 and 2 against the Knicks, none of them are going in. Maybe do something a little different. Just a thought. Or the back-to-back calling the same play at the end of game 2. The first time it works, the second time you get stripped. I don't love calling the same play back-to-back times. So, look, I think he's a really good coach, though. And I know he gets a lot of criticism for the three-point thing. I get it. But I think he's a really good coach. He knows what it takes to win a championship here. He did it. And I like the extension. And I also like the fact that Sam Cassell is still on that staff. I wouldn't mind another respected veteran voice like when they had Charles Lee a couple years ago. Now bring in someone else like that. But, again, I think he's a good coach. I don't think he's as good as Udoka. I don't think he's the best coach. And I don't think he's Spoelstra. But I think he's good. You know, that if you want, I don't know if you want to make a list, you want to tell me he's top 10, top 8, top 11, I don't know. Fine. I'll put him in that range. Sure. So I like it. And I like also the fact, too, and I think this is a compliment of Joe Mazzulla, every guy that plays for him is bought in and goes the extra mile and hustles. And some of that is their personalities, right? Like, we see a lot of superstars in sports that are selfish. Tatum and Brown aren't like that, and I think that's a compliment to them and their character. But we see this team bought in consistently to Joe Mazzulla, especially in his first full year, right? Because that first year when he took over for Udoka 5 days before camp, it felt like there was a disconnect at times. And I remember Malcolm Brogdon was like, well, last year we had a defensive identity, now we don't, right? Once he had an actual full year, though, and they win the championship, it felt like guys were bought in his two full years as head coach, when he had full training camps, full off seasons. I think that's a compliment to him. So, and also Tatum likes him a lot, which does help. So that's thought on Joe Mazzulla's contract. Again, I like it. I do. But Tom, by the way, any thoughts on Mazzulla's extension?
It makes sense because the players are bought in. I like his philosophy. I don't think he's a top five coach. I think there's obviously better coaches out there. I think if the Celtics actually had Ime, they probably would win this year as well, barring a Tatum injury, or they don't lose to the Miami
Heat. Yeah, and I think that's a fair question, right? If Ime Udoka was the Celtics head coach, would they have been down 0-2 to the Knicks? And I don't think so.
And they don't go down 3-0 against Miami the year before they win the championship.
It's his own fault he's not their coach.
Absolutely.
Anymore. And Joe Mazzulla's won a championship as a head coach, and Udoka hasn't. And as good as Udoka is, and Houston's really good. So, again, I wonder, like, he's what, 35, Joe Mazzulla? Youngest head coach since Bill Russell to win a championship. He could very well grow into an elite coach. I mean, you remember, Tom, I know you're a younger guy, one of the youth of America, but when Eric Spoelstra first started coaching LeBron, there was a ton of criticism of him, that him and LeBron weren't on the same page and that Heat team wasn't going to put it together. Remember, they lost that first NBA Finals against the Mavs, and now we sit here and look at Spoelstra as the best coach in the NBA. So I wouldn't put it past Mazzulla to grow into one of the elite coaches in the league, and maybe they see that in him.
And he has a good chance. You're going to learn a lot about Joe Mazzulla as a head coach this year, because without Tatum, without the most talented roster in the NBA, he is going to actually have to coach, in a sense, where he can't rely on having the best five, starting five in the NBA, and going out there and just letting them huck threes. He's going to have to coach this year.
And there's an old saying about coaches that it's really year three when they're comfortable and they have their program going. This is Joe Mazzulla's fourth year now, third full year, because remember, he took over right before the season a couple of years ago. So I do, you know, I think he's going to be more comfortable now than if this Tatum injury happened a couple of years ago. And I think that's going to, but you're right. If they're good, I think it's going to be a reflection on Jaylen Brown and Joe Mazzulla. And if they're not good, it's going to be a reflection mostly on the Tatum injury, but also on Jaylen Brown and Joe Mazzulla.
And if they're not good, I'm okay with that, because I am fully sold on AJ DeBance, the number one, number two prospect coming out of college this year. The kid from Brockton, I am so unbelievably high on him. He is an athletic freak.
DeBance or DeBantista?
Something along those lines. I think it's DeBance.
DeBance, okay.
I'm so high on him. So if you know they're bad, they get that, I'd be okay.
I grew up down, like 10 minutes away from where he grew up, but I pronounced his name wrong. So, of course. Shout out Brockton.
Big flex.
Yeah. Big fundraiser tonight for boxing. Boxing for Brockton, too, by the way. Bridgewater Vets Club. Just throwing it out there. Speaking of Brockton. But I do like the Mazzulla extension, and I think at times he got outcoached in that series against the Knicks last year. I also think the Knicks were idiots for firing Tom Thibodeau. I think he's a really good coach. So take that for what you will. And he's won a championship. But I want to get back to the Red Sox here. And Rob Bradford's hanging around the studio somewhere. His show's coming up next. We might do a little crossover next segment. When it comes to where the Red Sox are at, because again, good win against the Padres last night, I think we've seen a leveling up from them over the past month or so. And, of course, if you compare the Red Sox to the last year's Red Sox, the year before's Red Sox, or the 2022 Sox, yeah, they're a hell of a lot better. But even look at, like, some of the stats here, and I'm not going to read off every single stat to you, but runners in scoring position, right? They're hitting .254, which is 13th in the league. It's okay. It's average, right? Right about in the middle. But in early June, they were 22nd. So in 2 months, they've jumped up 9 spots. Right? They're doing some of the little things right. Their defense has gotten a little bit better. It's still not good, especially in the infield. But it's gotten a little bit better. Also, their bullpen, light years ahead of where it was a year ago. Their bullpen right now, 421 innings their bullpen has thrown, 12th most in the majors. Their bullpen ERA is 5th in the majors. Go back to last year, they had the 10th most innings pitch, but they were 24th in ERA. So their bullpen has been better. Their starting pitch, and it, to me, this is really, I think, where the change has been over the past 5.5, 6 weeks, is their starting pitching outside of Garrett Crochet, because he's been great all year, has gotten significantly better. Like right now, the Red Sox are at 54 quality starts. All of last year, they had 57. All of 2023, they had 47. And they're at 54 right now. And a lot of that is in the last 6 weeks, 7 weeks, it's been Bayo and Giolito have been going deep into games, which A, helps your bullpen, right? But also, it's now guys besides Garrett Crochet that have been pitching well. And I'm still skeptical of the Red Sox in the playoffs because they don't have Joe Ryan or someone that I view as a true game two starter in a playoff series. I don't know if they have that guy. Now, Bayo could prove me wrong. I don't think Giolito's that guy. I think Giolito's a game three or four starter. We'll see. I don't think he's that guy. And he missed all of last year. He was not good to start this year. He's pitching really well right now. I don't know if I see him keeping that up for 3 more months. Yeah, and I'm not telling you he's going to all of a sudden suck, but I don't know if he keeps that up for 3 more months. But he's been really good. But Bayo's the guy. I mean, really, in a way, like, because we've talked a lot on this station and Red Sox fans in general about them not trading, and Joe Ryan's the name everyone uses, but whether it's Joe Ryan or Merrill Kelly or Zach Gallen or Nate Eovaldi, you name it, they didn't trade for any of those guys. So in one respect, they failed to get a guy like that. The inverse of that is now Brian Bayo has an opportunity to actually emerge as that number two starter. And we'll see if he does. He's been great. And he's going to have another opportunity. What's he pitching tomorrow, I think, against Padres? Don't quote me on that. But he's going to have another opportunity to continue that. So the Red Sox, to me, over this past month, have really leveled up. And it's been great to watch. But it's so much to me about the pitching staff. And I know the Devers trade, because we're only almost 7 weeks removed, I think, from the Devers trade in mid-June. Obviously, that hurts their lineup, and that's been really that's the biggest story of the Red Sox season up until that 10-game winning streak they had before the All-Star break. The biggest story of the year was the Devers trade. Their lineup has been pretty good. They're sixth in average, they're ninth in home runs, they're fourth in runs, and I actually think their lineup has been more consistent over the past month, because if you remember, before the All-Star break, yeah, they were top five, top six in batting average and runs, but they had a game against the Cardinals where they scored 18. They had a game against the Orioles where they scored 19. They had games where they blew out the Rockies. So they were kind of putting it together in short spurts. And then they'd have two or three games in a row where they'd score 3 runs. You know, they lose 3-2 to the Angels. Don't forget that afternoon game in late June. And they just couldn't move guys over at all. Whereas I think over the past month, the offense has been a little bit more consistent, right? They're putting more of those 4 or 5 run games together instead of, hey, the 1-8 run game and then the 2 or 3 games where they score 2 or 3 runs. And I think that's been, it's like, I mean, look, they scored 9 runs in a win against the Phillies. I get it. But then against the Dodgers, right, they had 2 games where they scored 4 runs. Against Minnesota, they had 4-8 in a 13-run game. Against the Astros last weekend, they had a 7-run game, a 6-run game, an 8 and a 6 against. So point is, it hasn't been as top-heavy as it was earlier. So I think the offense has been more balanced. But again, it comes down to this pitching staff. And the improvement in the rotation, especially Bayo and Giolito, and this bullpen is just pitching so much better than it was a year ago. Again, the innings differential is not that big. It is better because the rotation's been better, but they're just so much more effective, whether it's Chapman Weissert, Slayton when he's been out there. It's just much more effective in the bullpen. We'll see if Steven Matz can be part of that. I don't know. And I still don't know what they're going to do come crunch time this season. Like, Crochet's obviously going to be a big piece of it, and Bayo is. And I think Giolito, do they put Buehler in the bullpen? And because you wonder, it feels like Buehler, and I know last night he had six innings, shutout ball, and he was great. On the whole, you feel good about him for two or three innings in a start, and then there's a couple other innings where either he gives up a bunch of runs or he just barely avoids giving up a bunch of runs. You don't feel great. So you wonder, is Buehler better off in the bullpen throwing two innings at a time? Or maybe they envision that to be Dustin May. I don't know. I do wonder, come late September, playoff time in October, if they make it, what they kind of do. Is it Buehler that goes to the bullpen? Is it Dustin May that goes to the bullpen? I'm not sure. And I think Chapman's a guy. I know he's been awesome this year. He's been one of their three all-stars. We saw him leave that game against the Dodgers. I want to kind of manage his innings as we go down the stretch here. I want him fully healthy and fully ready to go by mid to late September. And I'm not saying to shut him down, but I just monitor. Like, they're monitoring Crochet. They've spread out some of Crochet's starts. I want to do that with Chapman too. So, again, I think, and we saw evidence of this last night, right? You got a quality start last night. Your bullpen was pretty good last night. And your lineup, again, Yoshida was big, but Abreu had the two-run homer. Bregman drove in a run, right? Then you had the wild pickoff throw. Duran scored. You're running the base as well. Patience at the plate. It was good to see. And speaking of patience at the plate, Roman Anthony signed an 8-year contract extension this week. And I mentioned patience at the plate because actually, as the number one prospect in baseball coming up, the thing I've been most impressed with when it comes to Roman Anthony is his ability to draw walks in a limited amount of time. I mean, so far, he's played 48 games. He's drawn 27 walks. We're talking about, a walk more than every other game. And he's been hit by 5 pitches. So if you want to include that, that's 32 times he's gotten on base, whether it's a walk or a hit by pitch. And we all remember that Sedan Rafaela walk-off homer against Tampa before the All-Star break, but it was Anthony that drew the walk right before that. So I love the Roman Anthony extension. And you look at now they have Rafaela locked up long-term. Bayo, we'll see if Bayo is a 2 or a 3. Right now he's a 3. Could he grow into a 2? I don't know. But either way, they have him locked up long-term. Christian Campbell has been better down in Worcester over the past few weeks. I know he had to get demoted for a reason, though. So we'll see what they get out of him long-term. We'll see if they're able to keep Abreu here long-term. And Marcelo Meyer, I'd like to see him actually play in the month of August and September, which he hasn't been able to do when he's been in the Red Sox organization before giving him an extension, but the potential is there. Narvaez is another guy I hope they keep around long-term. So it's nice to see them now locking up some of these guys because that's an issue, right? When we talk about the last core they had with Betts and Bogarts and Benintendi and Vasquez, they didn't lock those guys up long-term early enough, and those guys are all playing somewhere else. And I know Vasquez hasn't been that good since he left the Reds. I get it. Okay, I know. But Benintendi made an all-star team after he left Boston. Betts is having a down year right now, but he's a top 10 player in baseball. Bogarts is having a good year. Despite what happened in April and early May with Bogarts, he's rounded into form and he's having a good year. And I only bring that up to say this. It's nice to see them this time around locking some of these guys up early. Because I don't know if they'll be able to keep all of them, but you have Anthony, the number one prospect in baseball, guy who has been here 48 games. He's hitting .281. And real, I mean, he's been, it's funny because Anthony's hitting .281 right now, which on the surface is good anyway. But if you break it down further, if you remember, he really struggled early on at the plate when he came up in June. He only hit .210 for the month of June. So hit .329 in the month of July. And he's hitting .300 so far in August. Granted, it's only 5 games. But we've seen from him, I think, a guy who looks like the number one prospect in baseball, especially when it comes to his plate vision and his hitting. And I think defensively he's getting there. That's going to take a little bit of time. So it was great to see them lock him up. I think it's a great deal for the team, and there's escalators in it, so it could end up being a good deal for Anthony. And you think 8 years too? So he's going to hit free agency right around 29 or 30, which means he'll get a huge contract. If he continues on this track, he'll have this contract and then he'll get a massive, massive $400-500-600 million deal 8 years from now. And I think that's, again, so I think I love the deal for the Red Sox. I like the deal for Anthony, but I love it for the Red Sox to have him around. And again, it's just nice organizationally to see them locking up this young core. If only they could be good at the trade deadline, it'd be nice, you know, right? Be even better. But again, you lock up Roman Anthony, you're playing really well in this stretch against World Series contenders. I think this is a great sign after a trade deadline that I think disappointed a lot of people. And that was a situation, this team could have cratered. They could have turtled. We saw it the last couple of years. Do nothing at the trade deadline. I mean, last year they brought in 5-6 guys at the trade deadline. None of them were good. Year before, they did nothing. And both years, the Red Sox cratered. Now, okay, you bring in two kind of more minor moves. You could have cratered. You could have folded. And they've been better since the trade. I mean, really, that stretch before the trade deadline, were they 4-5 in those 9 games against World Series contenders, then played pretty well against Twins. They've been better since the deadline, to their credit. So that's been great to see. And that's why I think tonight, and Bradfoe is going to dive into this a bunch on Baseball Isn't Boring, and we'll hopefully have him on next. Tonight is, a great night, hopefully, for the, because you're going against Michael King, a great pitcher for the Padres. World Series contending team you just beat the night before. Can you follow it up with another win and win this series? And if not, can you win tomorrow and win the series and win another series against a World Series contender? Did it against the Dodgers? Did it against the Astros? Can you now do it on the road against the World Series contender in San Diego? So I'm going to wrap up the show coming up next. Hopefully we'll have Rob Bradford on. Your calls and text 617-779-7937. Final segment.
What's up? It's Draymond Green, back for my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast, The Draymond Green Show. Unfiltered takes, real hoop talk, and big-time guests. There's no holding back on the court or on the mic. Follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming up next, back here on WEEI, I'm John Lyons, rounding out my show. But coming up next is Baseball Isn't Boring with Rob Bradford, who's here with me. And Rob, I will say, earlier in the year, the Red Sox, it felt like they were trying to prove you wrong and make baseball boring a little bit those first couple months.
Yeah.
But I was talking last segment, this turnaround that we've really seen since the beginning of June, but especially since early July, I'm not going to sit here and say they're a World Series contender. I'm not trying
Why
to go
not?
Overboard. But that's the, think about it. They're getting into that territory. Because the way I look, and I want to get your take on this, because we talk so much around the All-Star break of they have these 9 games against all, you know, against World Series teams, these nine games. And they went 4-5 in those games. Not great, but they held, you know, they treaded water, I guess. But they're in the midst of another one of those stretches because Houston's a World Series contender. So is San Diego. They just played great against Houston last weekend. Now that last night against the Padres, they were great. They obviously have another series against Houston coming up after this Padres series. It feels like they're passing this test now against some of these other teams that are World Series contenders.
First of all, it's great to see you, my friend.
Yes,
excellent
you too.
Job. I walked around the river listening, and can we just say, like, we talk about San Diego, and we were just talking about San Diego. It's, you know, I said A.J. Preller traded the San Diego weather to Boston a couple days last week. But this right here, walking around Boston with this weather, this is the most beautiful city in the world. Like, I honestly believe that. And I, obviously, I'm biased.
Me too. Yeah.
But when you walk around this, if you just were dropped into here, and you have the colleges on one side, you have the city on the other, you're walking across the river, like, all of it. Anyway, all that said, yes, the Red Sox, it's not a fluke, man. Like, the thing is like you said about the World Series. Well, here's the thing. Number one, it would be very difficult for me to say they're not going to make the playoffs because, yes, they got this stretch. It's challenging, but they've already shown they can beat the Astros. They've already shown, you know, I think they're on par with the Padres. And then you get into the soft underbelly of, like, not a really difficult schedule until the very end, really. I mean, I think after that, the only teams that you play with a better record than yourself are Toronto and Detroit, and they're the last two series of the year. But, John, I mean, I think the thing is, and I wrote about this morning, We can't say this is a fluke anymore. You go back.
I agree.
If you want to do the ADBD before Devers, after Devers, if you want to use that as a launching point, fine. Or if you want to use June 28th as a launching point, which I know that in the Red Sox notes they love to do. But they've had a 10-game win streak. They've had a 7-game win streak. They have the most wins, I think, tied with the Brewers since June 28th. You have three starters who – you're the only team with three starters with a 2.7 ERA or better in baseball. You have a bullpen since that time with the second-best ERA in baseball. You have more games of scoring 10 or more runs than any team in baseball. And, yeah, like, we can get upset over the Devers trade, and we can get upset over the trade deadline, and we can say, hey, you know what? You didn't take care of business like we thought you would against the Phillies, Dodgers, whatever it is. But the fact of the matter is all those things line up. Like, we have to start saying, okay, this is not a fluke. I don't know if they're going to win the World Series, but certainly whatever they did, and you and I probably, like, we're screaming from the mountaintops about – I was almost swore. Stuff they didn't do or did do. Say, what are you talking about? What are you talking about, Craig Breslow, where you said you're going to win more games doing it this way than the other way? Like, well, you know, mea culpa, man. Mea culpa. Because how they've landed right here, like, you can't, I think it's inarguable to say that they are absolutely a playoff team.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think you also look at, and you kind of alluded to this, the AL. Like, I think Detroit's better than them. I think in a series, I might give the Yankees an edge, right, because they have Rodon and Freed at the top of that rotation. Like, I might give them the edge. Houston, maybe, because they have Valdez and Brown, but they just swept Houston. But, like, the NL, you could make the case there's six or seven teams in the NL that could win the World Series. Like, realistically.
Oh, sure.
Right?
Look at, I mean,
Phillies, Mets, Dodgers, Padres, yeah. Cubs, Brewers. Like, you could make a case. Whereas the AL, it's not like that.
The Red
at
Sox,
all.
And I kind of cringe every time I mention run differential because it can be, you know, skewed one way or the other. But bizarrely, John, like, you love the analytics and you know how teams are built. Bizarrely, front offices obsess over run differential. Like, I remember a couple of years ago with the Cubs, when the Cubs came out of the trade deadline or the All-Star break, and they're like, you know, I don't know, like, they didn't have a good record. They were playing the Red Sox. They're under 500. But Jed Hoyer kept referencing, I think we're better than we are because of run differential. Next thing you know, they're buying at the deadline. They go on a run. So they obsessed over the run differential. The Red Sox have the third best run differential in baseball, the best in the American League. The only two teams bet with better run differential than them are the Cubs and the Brewers. That's another thing that we have to pay attention to. So, yeah, I mean, but you're right. I mean, before we talk about any World Series or anything else, you've got to get through the American League. And I think the best version of the Red Sox are as good as any other team in the American League.
And it's funny because I think when a lot of people think of run differential, they think offense. I think the biggest reason their run differential has been so good is their pitching's been so much better. I mean, you look at last year, their bullpen, 24th in bullpen ERA, 10th most bullpen innings pitched. This year, they're 12th in innings pitched, so kind of the same. But they're, what, 5th in ERA in the bullpen? Right? And there's 54 quality starts this year, Bradfo. They had 57 all of last year. Like,
yeah.
I think the pitching has actually been a bigger factor in this run differential.
Oh, there's no question. When they went on that run, when they started winning, it was the pitching. I mean, there's no question about
guys
it.
Guys going deep into games, pitching well.
So this leads us to, we've been rattling off all these numbers, and we'll continue to rattle them off for the next 2-plus hours. But it's also the eye test. It's also the reality. Like, we can complain. Like, I gave them a C- at the deadline. Because as I explained, hey, listen, I've studied hard for tests plenty of times and landed with C-. Good try, good effort. It's like the kid in the runway at the Lakers game, right?
The Heat, the LeBron.
Good effort. So, hey, listen, you didn't get what you set out to get. And now you win, that's fine. I mean, I think they've only lost one game since the deadline. But still, the reality is that when the rubber meets the road, when you need that starter the most to get through some playoff series, you're going to need somebody. And, okay, let's assume that Crochet is good. Let's assume that Giolito's good. Let's assume that Bayo's good. That's all well and good. You still, up until before yesterday's game, you're like, holy crap. Who would pitch a fourth game?
Who's game four?
Right.
Yeah.
because it wasn't that version of Dustin May, and Kyle Harrison's still in the minors. He looked good the other day. But and Walker Buehler, after the Philadelphia game, wasn't good. But that's why last night's game, that was by far, John, like the biggest element of this whole thing. And maybe it was because, as Buehler said after the game, the weather makes the ball move different in the West Coast. And I don't know what it was. But if you had to power rank the options that you have to be that fourth guy, and they're going to need that fourth guy, unfortunately for the Red Sox, I would still say it's Buehler. And they don't have – because they didn't get somebody else, they don't have that other option. And that is sitting there as the problem, along with, you know, what does Jordan Hicks look like, whatever. But that is the biggest issue when you say, all right, you've proved us wrong to this point, but what's going to happen when it really counts, when the calendar rolls over to October?
Yeah, and that's like you look at a team like Detroit where their fourth starter is probably going to be Jack Flaherty in a game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because like Scoobles as good as Crochet. Olsen could have been an all-star. Mize was an all-star. And then Flaherty, I know he's having a down year now, but like that dude's good.
And,
right?
And John, like and I've said this before, the great thing about doing the podcast is I get a chance to talk to a lot of people about a lot of subjects that I normally wouldn't get a chance to talk to. And Mike Hayes, and who's the Arizona Diamondbacks GM. I still can't believe he's not the president like of baseball operations.
It's weird, yeah. Abington Mass guy, by the way.
Oh, great. Go the best.
It's where I grew up.
Two of the great. All the greats are
and
from
Abington. And Zach Coe, producer.
All the greats, all like I said. I mean, it's science.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
But 2 years ago when I'm hanging out in the playoffs with Mike Hazen, and he said, like he said on the podcast, he's like, I feel like I didn't do my job at the deadline because we're a starter short. I mean, this is why it's going on. And after, I said, do you remember saying that? He's like, yeah. We had to throw a bullpen game in the fourth game of the World Series. And when you don't get that guy at the deadline, that's the thing that resonates for me. Maybe Buehler's that guy, but keep it in mind anyway.
All right, he is Rob Bradford. He's going to be here for a while. What do you want till
7:40? Obviously, Gordo played Tessie. He's here.
Matt Gordo.
Yeah, yeah. So big day for play Tessie yesterday because the San Diego scoreboard. They had cited something that Roman Anthony doesn't like ketchup, which is a play Tessie exclusive.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. It's little things in life.
Hey, I can't wait for some ketchup talk on baseball. Boring with Rob Bradford and Nat Gordo. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Tom Crisafulli. Great job producing. As always, I'm John Lyon. Stay tuned, though, for Baseball Isn't Boring with Rob Bradford.
It's Draymond Green kicking off my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast. And trust me, I'm not holding back. Listen to the Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.